Ah!
If the Empire has this kind of power, what chance do we have?
What chance do we have? The question is, what choice? Run, hide, plead for mercy, scatter your forces. You give way to an enemy this evil with this much power, and you condemn the galaxy to an eternity of submission. The time to fight is now.
Yes.
Every moment you waste is another step closer to the ashes of Jeddah.
What is she proposing? Just let the girl speak.
Send your best troops to Scarif.
She talks sense.
Send the rebel fleet if you have to. You need to capture the Death Star plans if there's any hope of destroying it.
You're asking us to invade an Imperial installation based on nothing but hope.
Rebellions are built on hope.
Hello and welcome to the Star Wars TV cast. I'm Jonathan.
And I'm James.
And this is episode 30.
In this episode, we're going to be covering Rogue One, a Star Wars story.
Excellent. And hello, James, and welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me. Thank you, everybody. Be patient with me.
James is an old friend of mine and fellow photographer, a bit of a legend in the film and TV industry.
I wouldn't go that far. I've managed to blag my way onto certain sets of certain sci-fi. The other star, not the wars, the trekking type. But
And James has recently shot the posters for Picard and Discovery and
Strategy Worlds and all that fun.
So he's an old sci-fi fan going way back. And James, what was your first memory of Star Wars?
My first memory is I'm not that old, Jonathan. So I didn't get to see New Hope in the movie theaters, in the cinema. I remember going to, and this is, we're talking pre-Blockbuster. So I remember being in the little town where I lived in England, and they had the independent video rental place. And I went in, and there was the cutout. There was the Star Wars New Hope cutout. 6 foot in front of me was Luke with the blaster. And I was so excited. And I don't know if you remember, but back then, the VHS cases were huge, those oversized things. And I remember getting my little hands on that and just running up to the counter and asking if it was in. And that was it. And then we ran home. And I think I had it on a two-day rental, and I think I must have watched it like 5 times. So that was...
Yeah, fantastic.
That was my first sort of Star Wars weekend, I suppose.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, well, you this is early binging before binging happened.
Yeah, I melted that tape. I do remember going back, and we'd you know, back in the day, we'd rent it like quite often, and that tape was like worn threadbare by the time, you know, after about 6 months, like kids had just worn the damn things out. So
exactly. Well, look, James and I are old friends, and we talk almost on a daily basis and about all things Star Wars and TV very often. So hopefully this will be just a nice segue into a podcast, because we feel like we podcast every day with each other, as I'm sure.
Now we're going to force everyone else to listen to it.
Exactly right. But we're super excited about Rogue One and very excited to be doing Andor. I really feel it's going to be the best of the Star Wars, the Disney Plus Star Wars series.
Absolutely.
What do you think?
Yeah. Very excited for this one. Very excited.
And we're going to kick things off with a rewatch of Rogue One. And what are your first thoughts of it, James?
It's great, man. It's in my top three. I mean, obviously Empire is definitely number one, but this one is a different kettle of fish. I mean, it's amazing. It's a desperate feel, similar to Empire. You go into this and you know that it's a suicide mission. You just know, and it's like, and my hat's off to Gareth Edwards. I mean, he puts together this incredible cast, knowing full well that they're all going to eat it at the end. It's like, you know, it's like there's no spin-offs here. There's like, you know, he's not getting a trilogy out of this. It's like this. But within a couple of scenes, you're invested. Like these characters are phenomenal. And I think because they're disposable, there's no shining sort of knight. There's no princess to save. it's down and dirty. It's the grunts. It's like Cold War meets Vietnam in the Star Wars universe. It's like, I'll get into the Vietnam thing later, but yeah. But
yeah, I felt it was really World War II. Yeah. And kind of harken back to old World War II.
Yeah, there's a Dunkirk spirit to it, for sure. Yeah,
And I was thinking about this, like George Lucas, when he was doing the original Star Wars, thought back to the serials like Flash Gordon and all of that. And for us, for our generation, even though I'm a little bit older than James, growing up, that was always World War II films on TV, like The Great Escape and The Dirty Dozen and things like that, but also Vietnam films as well growing up. So I thought it had a real war feel to it. And Gareth Edwards, as you say, is a brilliant director and handled this really well.
I don't think he took a step wrong. I mean, we've had many conversations about many Star Wars films, and we beg to differ on many of the directors, but we won't get into that now.
Ryan Johnson!
Yeah, I'm with you on that one anyway. But Gareth Edwards did an incredible job, and I hope he gets more for this.
Yeah, me too. Yeah. Look, I when I first saw this at the theatres, I was so excited because it seemed like Star Wars was back, and they got it so right. I came out of this with zero complaints and was just so excited about all the upcoming films. And on this rewatch, I always knew I enjoyed Rogue One. But this was way better than I expected. The story was great. The pacing was tight. There were callbacks, but they weren't too obvious. There were space battles, stormtroopers, walkers, new planets, Vader. And it was definitely worth a rewatch. So I hope you all enjoyed it as well. And very excited to chat about it.
And because this isn't a brand new film, and I know everyone's probably watched it a few times and stuff, so I think I'm going to try and make an effort to not go over the obvious points, I think, because we could there's a certain robot that we could go on about how amazing he is, and Alan, who voices him, is incredible, etc. But yeah, let's try and pick a few different things this time around after it's a deep watch and looking at it from a different I tried to look at it from the idea of like what's to come, what we're going to get in Andor.
Oh, good.
And then, and so you're like, what I saw in Rogue One is, oh my God, that's amazing. We will actually get to see more of that rather than, oh shit, they've just blown everything up. I'm going to get into this like I'm doing a travel show here, but like my first main thing is like location, location, location. I mean, like this one showcases so many worlds. It's like, it's just Star Wars universe wet dream. I mean, the Ring of Khafrin, like the art direction there is like Blade Runner. You've got this hustle, this bustle, this like underbelly of a city.
Let's get into it and let's just jump into the show and we'll do our review of Rogue One. So James, what would you like your first point to be?
Well, I think my first point is like the locations. I think everything was like great and new. There's so many different worlds. Interestingly enough, like most of them have got the most shocking sort of conditions to live in and stuff.
Yeah.
Apart from Scarif, which is like, oh, we're on a tropical paradise full of at-tats that are going to just blow you to crap. But yeah, just from the off, like from the Ring of Khafrin, and like you've got this.
That's amazing.
Oh my God, it's just, I mean, it's Blade Runner. It's like it's Ridley Scott's, like, if he was doing Star Wars. I mean, it's the hustle and the bustle of the tight, sort of dirty, smoky streets, and it's the perfect location for shadowy deals to go down, and it immediately introduces you to this. We're no longer in the Star Wars light and dark. No longer Sith and Jedi. We are now in the gray area. We are in Black Ops. We're in the trenches, and it's great. And
and
Cassian like just executes that dude early on because he knows something. Like, poor English guy just gets popped in the back of the head, and it's like, cool, okay. And that sets the scene. It's like,
yeah, that moment when Cassian shoots his contact, this is a more mature Star Wars. That as you say, it's not shot for kids.
No.
This is a grown-up Star Wars full of dark, more interesting themes, and it was really such a great way to kick things off.
Yeah, yeah. It's, I mean, it's got that, it's got that feel of like a 1960s or 70s sort of like Cold War spy thing. It's like, this could be East Berlin or something. It's like, you know, but the whole film, and I hope the whole series is built on this, is like the moral compass and like, you know, what, you know, what do I do in the name of good? How far do I go to the dark side? Yeah. To keep with the good,
in order to do good,
exactly. And I'm
touching on your point of locations. The Ring of Kafirin was just so amazing. The, when you had the opening shot of from space, and it's basically just two asteroids orbiting each other with a city built between it.
It's the space bit at the beginning is great. It's the classic, you, the way the camera plays, you think Star Destroyer's coming over the top. But it's actually the shadow cast from the sun over the ring of dust around the planet. And it's just, for me, it was like more science fact than science fiction at that point. I think it was very...
Yeah, exactly.
It was very... I mean, he plays on that a lot as well, the light in space and how it works. It's very 2001, I think, some of it. Yeah. So it's really very, very nicely
that,
shot.
I love that opening with the small ship spotted against the rings of the planet. But that was where Krennic was landing on the planet.
Yeah, no, you're right. To apprehend.
I'm Galen Erso.
So I'd like to talk, if I can, about a couple more of the locations, if I don't want to sort of ramble on like I'm doing.
Yeah, go for the locations.
I apologize now to everyone. This is not Star Wars Travelocity, but I'm going to get into it. But I mean, and this is what I love about... Again, thinking about what we're going to see during Andor. It's like Jeddah. I mean, here is the planet like steeped in Jedi myth, and you have that incredible collapsed statue, which looks rather like Obi-Wan, I'm just going to say. Anyway,
that's interesting.
And, you know, when we first watched this film the first time around, and when, you know, when they basically use the Death Star to destroy the holy city, as it were, you're heartbroken. But now we know we have a good amount of episodes that can explore Jeddah before it's destroyed. You know, we can we can walk the path, as it were, before it's wiped out.
So that's the beauty of Andor coming up, is that we do get to go back to all the planets we see, hopefully, especially Jeddah and especially the Ring of Kafirin. Because there were such amazing locations to kick things off with.
I do hope so. I do hope that we don't end up in a situation where we get directors come in who want to, show off their own sparks and go, well, I must be different. I must do something completely different. Yeah. It's like, I hope they stick to the path. But anyway, I'm just going to mention, I got a stack of locations, but I just have to have a shout out to Yavin 4. I've got to, because I mean, it's just the way they fleshed it out. Because God bless Lucas when he did it in 77. It's like, you know, it's like 10 blokes in a hangar somewhere and then paint the background. Whereas now we pull back and there's these big Aztec kind of pyramids and like there's hundreds of ships bustling around and stuff. And I thought it was really nice to just see that as it would be a fully imagined base and stuff. So, and then, as I mentioned earlier, that, and Scarif, like, you got Tropical Paradise at the end of it. Everything else is like, you have the Kyber Research Facility planet, which is like completely inhospitable. It's like, you know, everything is, and then the end thing is, it's like, oh, let's go and shoot in Hawaii at the end, or Fiji. It's like,
it was actually in the Maldives.
So obviously by the water, of course. Yeah. Silly me. Yeah. I'm sorry, Kathleen Kennedy, but I wasn't sure, did you need a vacation in the Maldives or something? It was like, oh, where can we go? That's in my world, that's the classic executive producer. Like, oh, I really feel that this would work in Hawaii or the Maldives. But it did work because you have this.
And we must stay the four seasons.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, for 4 months. But it was great because you have this beautiful, tranquil world, and then and then just. Shit hits the...
Well, it was classic Star Wars, wasn't it? So you have, you have Hoth, the ice planet, jungle planets, you have desert planets, and now, of course, we're on the tropical island planet, finally.
Yeah.
And it was just such a great juxtaposition to see the Empire shot against these beautiful blue waters tropical palm trees.
I mean, I know we've seen the AT-ATs in Kashyyyk and stuff, but like to see them coming through that beautiful water and stuff, and it's good.
Yeah, we'll jump back to the battle later. But what other locations did you like?
Well, Barney, like the labor camp, because this. I mean, we've now seen this in the TV series. We've seen this in Obi-Wan, we've seen it in The Mandalorian, but you see soiled, dirty troopers, and they're exhausted, and they're trudging around, and I love that. I've got a whole thing to talk about on costume design in a bit, but this, just the fact that like they're now acknowledging that, you know, these are worn down, sort of in the trenches kind of guys, and they're like, they're not on Scarif, like sunbathing when they're not on duty. No. These guys are trudging around like in dirt for like
conscripts.
Days. Exactly. So we have we have everything. We have this dirty, nasty planet. We have Jedha's beautiful, dusty sort of set in the lore of the whole Jedi world, and the research facility, which is just shocking. You wouldn't send your worst enemy there. And then we all go to Tropical Island at the end. So, I mean, it ticks all boxes.
Well, that's what I loved about this, was that it did hit the classic Star Wars, one environment per planet. And it's, like Coruscant is all city. And and they really steered into this. And that's the classic feel of this movie, was perfect, and it is my favorite film from the Disney Star Wars family. So let's just I'm just going to go back to a couple of things that I liked as we're opening up, and it opens with a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away, which was fantastic. Good to see that again. You knew that you're in a Star Wars film, especially when you see it in the theater. And then the music is so beautifully John Williams inspired. And I wanted to talk about the music of this, which was fantastic. And the music was done by Michael Giacchino. Oh. And I think he came on very late to this and talking to his brother about it. And he said, I'm a bit nervous about doing it, they said to him, you've always done a Star Wars, you know how to do a Star Wars movie.
But it's some big boots to fill, this, isn't it?
Oh, it is. Imagine that. Coming in, I'm like, but they followed the classic John Williams style of character themes. You know, when we first see Jin in the cell, the Jin theme is slow and melancholic playing in the background. And then the Rogue One theme, which is always played with Cassian, is bright and inspiring, like the Star Wars theme. And then they also brought in a lot of John Williams themes as well. Like when we first see Yavin 4, there's a short sting of the Star Wars theme.
Yeah.
And when we first see Bail Organa, there's a long, slow version of the Force theme playing subtly in the background.
I did love as well when we see Saw Gerrera the first time, and the music is more ominous. And just while we're on the sound of talking about sound and stuff, when he takes his first drag on his oxygen tank, and it's almost like Vader theme comes in, and the sound, they orchestrate that sound exactly the same as Vader's breath, I noticed. Yeah, and
exactly
like,
right.
And it's, you know, and there's a, you know, it's a clever like play on, is this the evil guy or is he not? But yeah, very good use of sound.
And they, when they were leaving Yavin 4 in the, which was a beautiful callback when the X-Wings were leaving.
Yeah.
you got that guy standing in the tower.
I have that in my list. That is, it's frame by frame. It's just brilliant. But yeah, again, the music rises and it's the same. It's the hark back to A New Hope and stuff, that launch is the same framing of the guy on the watchtower and the beacon going, and he's brilliant.
And they played a full throated version of the Star Wars theme when that happened, the John Williams version. So I loved the mix of original music and the Star Wars themes as well. The most interesting one was when we first see Vader, which I completely forgotten about. Except at the end, obviously.
I'm deliberately trying not to get into that end thing because it's been covered so many times. But yeah, but you totally forget that.
that he's so involved
yeah,
in the film.
Yeah, that Krennic goes to see him. See him in the back to tank, and it's like, yeah.
When we first see Vader in the back to tank, you have the original Vader's theme, which was from A New Hope, which is rather than the Imperial March, which is we've come to associate with Vader.
Yeah, I presume that's once he's ascended to the rank of ultimate evil that he gained that piece of music, I suppose. Yeah.
Exactly right. So I thought the music was on point, very John Williams, and congratulations to Michael Giacchino again for doing such an awesome job. And it's so important to Star Wars to have that orchestral feel, and I thought it was perfect.
I read some director once described like sound is like 60% that makes your movie, and if you get your soundtrack wrong, everything else can fall apart and stuff. But this nails it. I mean, as we've mentioned already, I mean we're fanboying on this, but like this movie just hits every point. All the, you know, please write in and sort of tear us to pieces afterwards if you feel differently. If you think Rian Johnson could do a better job, then please email me at no, I'm not doing that.
Well, that's why I was so excited after I came out of this movie for Disney Star Wars, because they got off to such a good start. And apparently this was a script they had standing by that they could just use. And so it was, and they had all the people involved already, so there wasn't any second guessing. They just went straight forward. And so the writers and Gareth Edwards and everything were all set up to go into this. And I thought it just hit on point. I was so excited for the rest of them.
Yeah.
But then we see what happens.
Yeah, yeah. But I think it's back to what we said earlier. This was like a one shot. This was a Hail Mary. Like a lot like the movie, and actually the production of the film was the same kind of thing. It's like, well, we've got nothing to lose, guys. It's like this is not the start of a trilogy. We are not trying to retell the story of Skywalker or any Jedi or anything. This is a separate thing, and that's the beauty of it. It gave them the freedom to take some risks and just massacre the cast, basically. So
And they were all the cast were brand new, and I loved all of them. Like all of them, I loved, and I thought that the characters were so great. There was no problem with the casting or who played who, because they were all just, you know, new characters without any pre-existing conditions on them. And I thought
let me stop you there, John.
Yeah, please.
A certain CG character.
James was talking to me about this before we started the day, and I didn't know who the hell he was referring to. Okay. And then I'm sitting there and I'm watching it, and I'm just like, oh my God, of course. So James, take it away.
I'm sorry, and I know, you know, the technology is incredible, and like, heaven forbid that, you know, ILM come looking for me or anything. But I mean, I just, every time I was looking at Tarkin, it's like, I'm looking at Gollum. I just couldn't help it. And I couldn't work out what was bugging me. And then I think it clicked. I'm like, I reckon his head was 5% too big.
Yeah.
Go back and look at it. It's like, and also they pronounced, I mean, I know he's gaunt and he's evil, but the bone structure is so pronounced. And his head is just that little bit too big for his little shoulders, and it just threw me.
And his body was a little bit marionette-y.
Anyway, there we go. That's my one nitpick, Gareth. Sorry.
But later on in the episode, later on in the movie, I thought he was. I kind of bought into it, and I thought he was menacing.
Yeah, no, I think if you, that's my thing. I think because later on, it's how he's lit, and he's lit in a flatter, darker, moodier kind of rooms and stuff. I think it's the first time you see him, and he's looking out to space, and it's quite heavily lit, and it just screams Gollum to me. But that's my only cast issue, and it's not really a cast issue because it's a CG dead man. So
considering I thought it was done pretty well, but it could have been better. But the character was played well, I thought.
Yeah, the character was played well. I just wanted to believe that he was there and Peter Cushing was there, but it's a silly little thing. We should leave that. Leave that well alone.
Well, what's your next point?
So my next point is, and I like to feel, and I hope that this is the overlying arc for the whole of the series that we have to come. And it's basically Cassian's moral compass. It's like, and we're, I've described it. It's like it's into the grey. We're away from the light in order to save us from the dark. So, and I, you know, he refers to himself and in effect to the rebel Black Ops team that stand behind him. And he says, we've done terrible things in the name of the rebellion. But earlier, he's also told Jin, rebellions are built on hope. So basically, it's two sides of the same coin, right? So you have the pure of heart, the idealist, and then you have the operatives in the shadows who make it happen. Which is like any society. It's like one can't function without the other. And it's that balance of like, you want to defeat the Empire, but how far along their path will you go to stop them? And I think what's interesting is, obviously, we in this film here, we see Cassian at the end of his arc. And I guess this is his redemption story. So I'm quite interested to see exactly how dark he did get, because.
But that's exactly right. Yeah, this is his redemption story.
Yeah,
and that's a really good point
to
make.
I'm excited. I mean, like, and that ragtag band of like Black Ops guys behind him, they just kick ass. That's like SEAL Team 6 in space. Yeah. I mean, like, to see this, see a whole season of this. I mean, you know me, and like this is the closest probably we're going to get to live action Bad Batch. So like, well, unless that's, you know, who knows. But I mean, I'm very excited.
There is the Ahsoka series.
Oh yeah, it's true. They could, that's another whole podcast right there. That one. but no, I don't think that's it. I think this whole it's the age old conundrum of how far you're going to go into the gray areas in the name of good, and let's hope that that we really, really explore how he got to this state, and I'm just excited to see all of that team just, you know, working together and, like, you know, just pulling off some missions. I hope that is a lot of the focus and we don't end up in, I'm not going to say it, but yeah, deep rest. This is like, I'm not, I can't say Boba Fett. I can't. Anyway.
No, Boba Fett.
No, I can't. Yeah, we can't go there. We can't have the Technicolor sort of speeder, sort of like scooter bike situation with this. God. This has to stay in the dark gray world of Cold War. And it has all the potential to do that. So very excited. I think that was, look, watching this film again, knowing we have a series, I was really excited about this. I'm like, okay, well, like, all of a sudden, these guys who just stood behind him for 5 minutes before he goes into battle, and now I'm invested in them because, hold on a minute, I could get a good 5 hours of these guys in action if I'm lucky. Yeah. So I'm just curious to see how we tackle this, how dark he's been, and, you know. And
well, we do get from the trailers, and I won't spoil it too much in case...
I haven't watched them.
If you want to jump up now. Yeah. Well, let's not spoil it, but it does do, it is the Cassian Andor origin story. And so they do go way back from his very beginning. Oh. And then hopefully we see it with his team, because it will be fantastic to just go back. Go on.
No, I was going to say, when you go way back, we're not talking pod racing and 5-year-old Cassian, are we? Spoiler.
There is.
No.
Yeah. There is a child, Cassian, and I'm sure he's an orphan, et cetera, because there is that line in Rogue One when he's speaking to Jin, and he says, I've been fighting the rebellion since I was 6 years old. So I think we go back to that time and explore how he became part of the rebellion and how he became so messed up, basically. Yeah, but this was his redemption arc. So no, you're right. I'm really looking forward to seeing how we got here.
Yeah.
And although we know his fate, and he's never in danger until Rogue One, he is in danger of being captured. He is in danger of getting his friends killed. He is in danger of blowing.
And I imagine
getting in trouble.
Yeah, and I'm sure he takes some losses along the way, and you know, makes some sacrifices.
Exactly.
So yeah. It's a great character to explore, and I'm so excited that they've decided to do such a big arc for it. So, and hopefully in the world, like in a similar way they've done with Mandalorian, we start to introduce other characters in this, you know, through this timeline, and we, you know, it expands even further. So very exciting.
Yeah.
So,
all right.
What's your next point then, Jonathan? What are you,
well, I am going to be some more classic things and go for the big set pieces in this show, and the first one is we'll go back to Jeddah. And the first question I have about Jeddah is, does the Star Destroyer floating above Jeddah break canon?
Or,
you know, because then otherwise it just makes the whole Battle of Hoth and landing the walkers doesn't make any sense and all of that sort of thing. My only thought is they had the shield on Hoth, but it is the first time we see a Star Destroyer in atmosphere.
Yes, I was thinking, yeah, exactly. And then don't we in Rise of Skywalker, don't we see hundreds of them at the end? Anyway, right, we're not going
to. I believe it was thousands, yeah.
Thousands that were just magically built. Just anyway, whatever, let's not.
They must have had the replicator from Star Trek. Oh,
I think I've got one here somewhere.
Yeah, but no,
you're right. Yeah, just to have that, I mean, just visually it's incredible. It sits over the top of the holy city of the Jeddah, and it's just like that ominous shape. You imagine just the shadow that thing is casting on the whole city all day, just literally casting darkness.
Yeah, and physically and metaphorically, because there's that line where Cassian says, "This town is ready to blow." And then you start to look, and then you start to notice all the quick movements, people packing up, and people, you know, the ships leaving, and a sense of panic in the town. As soon as he says that, we cut to the Imperial Patrol, and lo and behold, there are stormtroopers again. And looking back, as we've seen so many now with all these Disney series, but when this movie first came out, it was the first new live-action stormtroopers we'd seen, I think, since Return of the Jedi.
I think so. And what I love about this scene as well is it's stormtroopers in Black Hawk Down. They're just walking the streets, and the insurgents are like, you know, there's curtains twitching. You see, is it Cassian looks up and you see a sniper's shadow just slip behind something on the roof, and then somebody else. And it's like, oh my God, this is proper guerrilla warfare. And and again, we're into that whole gray area of Star Wars. Before it was like, pew, 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 I'm going to shoot you at distance with my brightly colored, you know, and now it's like, you know, homemade pipe bombs, and just, and it's very exciting.
And it was an amazing attack. And you're right, Imperial Patrol snipers from above, and we're seeing stormtroopers in action and actually shooting people with their E-11s, and they actually died.
Yeah,
you know, and people were going down left, right, and center. And to see death, permanent death in Star Wars, has been unusual in the last few years.
Yeah.
And you know, but it was such a great attack, and it was really good to see Jyn on display with her nightstick and blaster. That was super cool. And just when I think, oh no, here's another invincible character from Star Wars, she turns around and shoots the K2SO lookalike and kills him.
K2, again, Alan Tudyk, phenomenal. And it's just his so one-liners cool. Just... And amazing in this film.
K2SO is one of my points. I figured come it back would to be. That
That's why I kept away from him, because I've done it before, so I won't do that. So
exactly.
You can have Alan.
But going to that back to the battle, it was amazing to just see an AT-ST turn the corner and with a squad of stormtroopers. And then the battle ensues, lots of great fighting. And then finally, in the chaos of that battle, they try to escape. And after Jyn does shoot K2SO, he turns up and then just grabs that grenade from out of the air and tosses it back at a bunch of stormtroopers and blows them all up.
Yeah, just his line there again is just like, you know, Cassian asks him, "What? I told you to stay on the ship." And he's like, "Well, I think you need the help." He's like, "Yeah."
And then they're escaping, and they get stopped by the squad, and he's like, "Where are you taking those two prisoners?" And K2SO backhands Cassian, and that was a unscripted moment, apparently. Yeah, and he just slapped him across the face. And on rewatch, you can see as he's holding his hand, Cassian's holding his hand up against his face. You can see him kind of smiling behind.
Well, thank God it was Alan Tudyk in like a in a green screen bobble suit and not a full robot arm, I imagine.
No, exactly.
Taking his jaw off.
And then he says, you need to have a diagnostic. And he's like, I'm capable of running my own diagnostic. Thank you very much.
Yeah. No, I don't know what. I mean, it must be my love for that droid, but rewatching it, I thought there was more of him in the film.
Yeah.
And again, so I'm so excited that we now time travel back and we can, you know, we can.
Well, apparently he's not on the cast list
for
season one. Yeah, totally, really disappointed. But I'm hoping it might be secret and we'll see him later on in the season.
Hashtag bring back K2.
Yeah, exactly. And then again, I haven't watched this for so long. And as they're escaping, just unexpectedly, you hear Baze say, let them pass in peace. And then Baze gets up, the blind monk warrior with his stick, gets up and takes out about 10 stormtroopers. And it was like a classic scene of a force user. This was a force user and not a Jedi.
Exactly. I mean, it's the wannabe Jedi with it's like, these are not the droids you're looking for. The classic line of like, let them pass.
Let them pass, exactly.
Yeah. So, I mean, again, a great, great character. Like Wen Jiang.
Yeah.
Incredible martial artist.
And that fight scene, the amazing martial artist. But usually these scenes are not that believable, but the editing and his skills really made it seem possible that he could take out 10 stormtroopers with being blind and with a long piece of wood.
There's just the nuances before that fight starts where he hears almost the safeties click off on the guns and the shuffle of the feet and it's all right, yeah, we'd take care.
Yeah, exactly right. Okay. And it's that case of if you lose one sense, all the others become amplified.
Exactly.
And I believe it is the first time we see stormtrooper armor getting chipped. There was one moment where he hit him really hard. One of the stormtroopers were hit very hard on the head with his pole arm, and you just see this shattering of the ceramic armor. Yeah, and you see it again with Boba Fett when he comes in the Boba Fett series.
But yes, yeah.
That was the first time, and again, that adds to the realistic nature of real hits with real force.
Yeah, I mean, it's mythical. This stormtroopers, this shiny white armor that's indestructible, yet one blaster and pew, they're down. And it's like So now to see physical contact between like classic martial arts weapons, cracking the ceramic and stuff is, and again, it makes it more visceral. It makes it more real. I mean, it's still Star Wars, but it brings it into a more sort of like realistic combat situation and stuff. Again, that whole scene, like in the streets and like tight quarters and insurgents and stuff.
Exactly.
Very good and gritty.
I think that's what, well, for me, and I think for you as well, is that's what we want from modern Star Wars, is gritty realism rather than cartoon.
Yeah. Well, I think as you said, this is made for us or for not quite as ancient people as us, but it's not made for the kids and stuff. And I think that's this Disney has played it smart now and they've realized that, there's a captive audience of 40 plus gentlemen who are still obsessing about this and they want a deeper, grittier story. It's the same same with my other love, like video games. It's like the depth of games now, and it's like because they acknowledge that the people making them and the people playing them are older and are more sophisticated. And same with Star Wars now. We have this range. You can have like the younger fun stuff, but like this is clearly an adult show.
It is. Yeah. And it seems that's what they're going to go for with Andor. So I'm super excited. And, I've come to accept
Here we go.
Not every Star Wars show is made for me. And even though I love
them?
The Clone Wars.
Do you want to list them?
Yeah.
Come on, let's list them.
No. But it's a range of shows that are made for everyone.
Yeah.
And you can't have everything. And although I want everything to be filmed specifically for my taste, well, that's an unrealistic expectation.
I totally agree with you there. But what I can't stand is when you start off a story and you're like, oh, we've got this vision. It's going to be dark. It's going to be this. Mm. And then in the writer's room by episode 3, somebody craps it. And it's like, we've had some negative feedback at this, that, and all of a sudden you can see the ship is being steered the wrong way. And it's like, and I'm not going to hate on anything, but I will hate on Boba. And it just,
Boba was a mess.
Boba was a mess. And like the backstory and him, it was great. And his backstory was great. But like it lost its path for a couple of episodes and all the rest of it. And only when it became The Mandalorian.
And then suddenly we're on The Mandalorian again.
Well, when it became Mandalorian 2.5, it was awesome. But anyway, we've gone off track here. But you're right. I mean,
what's your next point?
Yeah, I'll move on. My next point is Boba Fett. Why is it so shit? No.
But I will say before we do move on, that Andor is being showrun and directed, I believe, by Dave Filoni, who is George Lucas's Padawan, basically. So he holds all the Star Wars knowledge. He sat at George Lucas's right hand all through the Clone Wars. And really, if anyone knows what is Star Wars. I still can't define it perfectly, but you know, but I know it when I see it, and I think that Dave Filoni knows it when he sees it, and will keep Andor on track.
I'm really excited about that, and he should, because he's basically the one who steered the ship back again. Is what we're talking about, and I think he's the right man for the job, and that's exciting to know that he is hands-on for the whole thing. So that's great. The next thing, I mentioned it earlier, and I just want to go into it now. Mm. Costume design. I have to say, this film is great. Again, because we're down, we're gritty, we're in the trenches. It's not, it's not like white versus dark. It's not that there's a real mess of everyone in there and on all these different planets. Like I love the you see the like almost robot monks. They've got the black robes on and they've got the very geometric like metal heads and like just the fun they must have had creating all the different characters and costumes in the back. For the action figure world, it's incredible, man. It's like there must be about 5,000. Like they're just like, you know, they're there, like
perhaps they had that in mind.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, possibly. Yeah, but I mean, it's great, and it's just spot on. And then, let's get into it. Let's start with we're going to start with the bad guys. So let's go in this. Just we had a cool range of stormtroopers. You start off with the Death Squad, like the black,
the Death Troopers.
Death Troopers that just come in and they're just like badass as anything. And then when we're on Scarif, you've got like the tan-coloured sort of troopers, which is like just a bit of a hodgepodge sort of stormtrooper mixed with scout trooper. And they've got that dusty, sandy colour to them and that. But and I think one of my favourites is when Jin, she steals the deck technician's outfit, the black outfit, when she's on Scarif and stuff. And I did a bit of, I got into this and I was like, are those wushu fighting sticks on her back that she never pulls? And I'm like,
I did a deep dive.
I'm really sad. I did a deep dive. Everyone did this. And so, of course, when you see that deck technician, they're landing the ship, they're actually the landing ones. They're just they're the landing ones from when you're at JFK and the guy's outside, that's your trooper. That's your
deck technician.
I know. I was expecting her to pull those at some point. There's like these crazy blades or anything. And it's like they're literally landing traffic ones that you see at any airport. It's brilliant. But again, she looked great in that suit and it's like darkness and stuff. And then Again, I'm going to get into this again. So, like, the Rebels look really gritty, and, like, Black Ops, again, the Black Ops team, I think, was just phenomenal. And just, like, I will buy the costume art book on just those characters alone. That was incredible.
Yeah.
But then when they land on Scarif, and they're in that, you know, they're in that dropship, they may as well have been playing sort of Ride of the Valkyrie. Because, like,
yeah, exactly.
There's the Vietnam GI vibe, and they're even wearing the helmets, a couple of them. I swear I saw a pack of Marlboros tucked into the side of one of them. It was like, it just, it was Apocalypse Now, man. It was like so good. And it's just nice to see that ramshackle, like, you know, that's the whole thing of the Rebels, is they just put together whatever they can to fight against these. But you know, the winner of the Red Carpet Award for Best Costume has to be my favourite character, and I'll get to him again later, but Ben Mendelsohn as Krennic.
I mean,
we always talk about this, like, you know you're the bad guy when you're the best dressed. But this dude is immaculately dressed in white.
Especially if you have a cape.
Yeah, he's got a white cape, everyone. I mean, like, I mean, that's just epic. But again, I think he still thinks, I mean... Well, I'll get into another point, but yeah, from costume design, like, across the board, I mean, it's like, it must be one of the most fun, like, franchises to work on, because there's every time you travel to another planet in this universe, they just come up with these beautiful, different, like, costumes for everybody.
Yeah, and one of my favorites was, and it was just these signed characters, but that's the level of detail in this movie, which I loved, was there was, as they're walking through the crowded streets on Jeddah, there were these two guys or girls in all dressed in red with the very high hats on, with just a slit for their eyes. But it looked slightly familiar, but so alien. And it was perfect. It just really adds to the fabric of the show.
I think that's what's so clever about them, especially for the background characters like that. They really study every cultural background, every city on Earth, and we'll go back to the
Ring of Kathrin.
So, and when we go and let's look back in Ring of Kathrin, it's like there is. The cultural references, and they've looked at everything. It's like, that could be Morocco, that could be Japan. Yeah. It's like there is such a really well-studied range of every ethnic background and every culture. And then it's put together in such a way that it is alien-like. But as you said, you feel some connection to it because your brain subconsciously has seen that culture in some shape or form already. And I think it's just a very clever way to sort of like anchor us into this world and make it believable in the first instance. You see this crowd. So hats off to everyone in the costume.
Absolutely. And on that point, when we first see Galen Erso, Jin's father, when they land on the planet, there's this shot of him standing against the black dirt with the green grass, and he's basically wearing samurai robes and his hair tied up in a top knot.
Yes.
And it's just so classic, so George Lucas, so Star Wars, and you know exactly you're in the right movie theater watching this film that you've watched.
It's also Kurosawa as well, like the grass is blowing, and I half expected him to pull a sword at that point, because there's that wide shot and the grass is flowing and Krennic is, you know, is walking up to him. One thing, I've got to ask this question. Whenever the bad guys come to get somebody, why do they always land 3 miles away? It's like, dude, just land next to the damn house and get him. It's like, anyway.
This is because this is in a galaxy far away, a long time ago, and they obviously just do things for effect. Like, you know, like the engineering is ridiculous. The architecture is overly done. They landed that far away just so they could have that kind of
shot.
You know, slow motion wide shot, which is very Kurosawa, as you say. But you know, everything is bigger in Star Wars. You know, what could be a pad now takes up, you know, 10 switches, and I think it's all just done, you know, with flair, because it's like, you know, no one wears a cape on Earth, but in but in Star Wars universe, but everyone wears a cape. James does has a collection of capes.
And cut to YouTube footage.
yeah, so I agree. The costuming was amazing and on point.
On to your next point then, Jonathan.
All right, anything else on that? All right, let's finish that up. Well, I'm going to go to some more set pieces, and this one will be the space battle.
Oh yes,
the battle of the battle at the Shield Gate, which was again just so exciting and unexpected, and and so generous of them to actually fill the screen with so many X-Wings and Y-Wings and TIE fighters and Star Destroyers and rebel spaceships and blockade runners. Well, and
I have this listed as my ultimate Star Wars tingle moment for this. when they drop, like the rebels, when they drop out of hyperspace.
Yeah.
And it's like the vibes, it's like Return of the Jedi, but bigger. And I thought about this. I'm like, no, this actually works, because in theory, as Senator Organa mentions, like, God bless him, as he's rushing off to Alderaan to warn everyone, I'm like, no, dude, hindsight, don't do it. But anyway, he's going to go and talk to the Senate and warn them that war is about to start. So I guess this is actually the first big space battle between the Empire and the Rebel. So it makes sense that the Rebel fleet is actually at its largest at this point, because this is before the Empire started hunting people down and, like, you know, intimidating and getting rid of certain races from it. And so this in theory is the biggest fleet there ever was. And it was great to see it just them throwing everything at it. It's like, it's brilliant, man.
So. Yeah, and that shot you're talking about is the POV in the back of an X-Wing that comes out of hyperspace, and then there's the entire Rebel fleet, and then you see Star Destroyers hanging there, and then, you know, with a blast of the Star Wars scene, the attack begins, and then we hear Blue Leader checking in, Gold Leader checking in. And then we see old footage of Red Leader, and I'm like, a tear came to my eye.
It was, as I said, it was my tingle moment for the whole film. It's like, and the music, back to your point about the music before, it's perfectly scored and pretty, pretty special. That does bring me on to, like, I think one of my other sort of points that I was going to make as well, if I can interject now, and you're going to appreciate this one, Jonathan, because this is close to our our hearts, both of us. So, like, Pirate Warfare. It's just amazing, man. So, like, I'd totally forgotten about this until I rewatched it. The genius of using the Hammerhead Runner to ram and shunt the Star Destroyers together. I mean, like, this is straight out of Blackbeard's 17th century handbook. This is like, you love it. You ram and disable the enemy ship. Like, put them off and half underwater and then finish them. And it just... it was just brilliant. Just, and to use tactics from like 17th century in space, and it was just genius, really.
Well, that's what's so exciting is these sea battles in space.
Yeah,
and it was just so glorious to see, you know, the Y-wings in all their glory just coming in and dropping ion torpedoes, which are like an EMP burst. So just fried all the electronics,
disabled them, and left them dead in the water. Exactly.
And then, as you say, the fake Admiral Akbar, we will call him that, even though it's someone else. But you had to have the Akbar in there. And just says, release the Hammerhead Corvette. And as you see them pushing in, and these giant, the scale of it was brilliant.
Yeah.
And then when it finally comes into the Shield Gate, it's in very slow motion with some ethereal music playing, and it almost elegantly smashes into the surface of the gate.
I was trying to nitpick that when I was watching him, like, is gravity in play here or not? I'm just wondering how that we see
momentum.
Both.
Momentum.
Yeah, all right. We'll give him that. All right, we'll give him that. But I was just like, yeah, it's quite lucky how it's actually falling in that direction in zero gravity. But yeah, you're right.
It was
perfectly planned. You're right. It was perfectly planned with the Hammerhead Corvette. Of course it was. But anyway, but a great moment and a great reference back to classic sort of like sea warfare. It was
absolutely
very amusing.
Absolutely. But my favorite part of that scene of the space battle was when Blue Squadron does this beautiful turn onto its back and dives through the slowly
closing.
And then rapidly closing shield gate, and then the first several of their squadron, one gets a pull up, but the others just slam into the closing shield, and the X-Wing skittering across the surface. And then we jump back into a full-blown dogfight. And another great callback, there was this swarm of TIE fighters that took off, and then we're off into the space battle. Then you start to hear about Red 5 calling out and saying, I'm in trouble, I'm in trouble. And then he crashes.
And
who was Red 5, James?
Oh, I don't know. I've never watched New Hope. It's is it Anakin's son? I don't know, some kid.
Yes, it would be. And, of course, Luke Skywalker takes over the handle of Red 5, and we see how it was cleared for him.
Mm.
But, yeah, a classic Star Wars space battle. Very, very satisfying. All right, James, what's your next point?
My next point is the other Ben, not the Ben Kenobi. I think this cast is incredible. It's brilliant. And when I first saw this, it was heartbreaking to know that the majority of them were on a suicide mission and we would only see them in these characters like for one film, and that was it. So like, thank God we have a prequel series now, because it's like we actually get to see them, hopefully they'll come back. Yeah. So my standout through all of this is, I mean, like, everyone is great, but like Ben Mendelsohn, not the Jedi Master, but the badass in white, like in this film, is incredible. And I think it's funny. I'm not sure many people had seen much of his stuff. You being Australian, probably are very aware of him and stuff. But I'm gonna say this: if you haven't seen this, guys, if you haven't seen the English film called Starred Up, it's not an easy watch. It's a tough prison drama in the UK, but it's Jack O'Connell playing the son of Ben Mendelsohn, and they're locked up in prison together, and it is incredible. It is darkest character like film you can watch, and it's one of those clearly like casting agents saw this and were like, right, these two, they're up for big things. So I would highly recommend watching that. I mean, it's got some very dark moments in it, but like both of them are pretty special in that. But I mean, but Mendelsohn in this film is, I mean, he's brilliant. I mean, he's, again, it's like, I don't know if he thinks he's the good guy or not. I mean, brilliant. It's like he thinks that he's going to save the galaxy by bringing order to it with the firm grip of the Death Star. And it's like...
Well, I think that might be a coping mechanism for him.
He's clearly an overachiever. Like, especially we see that when he goes to Vader and he's like, you know, he's like, have I still got the job? Have I still got the job, boss? Yeah. And he's like, and his throat's going and like, and he lets him go. So, I mean,
but I love how he keeps just turning up places where things that just keep falling apart.
Oh, yeah,
he's a step behind.
Yeah, exactly. It's like it just never goes right for him, does it? I mean, it's a miracle that, you know, he lasts as long as he does in this, really. And
you're right. He's a classic Star Wars villain, and you can't have Star Wars without a classic villain.
Well, exactly. And now, I mean, I think he is in the series, isn't he? I think he's been cast. I think
I'm not sure. I've actually tried to be coming this as fresh as possible and not watch too much of it. So I don't know whether he is in. I hope so.
I hope. Yeah, I would imagine that he will rear his head. And I know I read up, and sadly, I know Mads Mikkelsen is not. I think Mads was like, I don't see you. You've got to give me a really, really, really good reason to return to this. So sadly, I don't think we'll see him in it, which is a shame because he's amazing in everything as well.
Yeah,
but I think Mendelsohn's like is great in this, and it's just, you know, the whole white cape and the standing around and you almost don't, like, I know this is blasphemy, everyone, I'm sorry, you almost don't need Vader in this. Apart from, obviously, the scene which we are not talking about because it's been talked about forever.
No, we're not going to talk about
We're not going to talk about it.
No.
The old force push, throw, throat grab, like bounce down, just kicking ass all the way. But I think you almost don't need Vader. I mean, like, Mendelsohn's, like, Krennic is just, I mean, it's like, again, I haven't read up enough on this, but I don't know if we're getting Thrawn at any point anywhere. But I mean, like, if...
I think maybe in the Ahsoka series.
Right. I mean, if Mendelsohn hadn't been cast, I would have put him in that role. So, he stands out for me in the cast that is phenomenal, but he's a head and shoulders above everybody else. So, I mean, that's.
He was classic. His delivery, he's so threatening and smug. But then you also see how desperate for power he is and to get all the credit when Tarkin tries to take credit for the Death Star, and he does run off to Vader.
Yeah, exactly. He's like, his it's mine.
But my favorite moment of his was the attack on Scarif happens, and he's in the command area, and these explosions are going off everywhere, and everyone's standing around
watching, and he looks at him, he's like, "What the fuck?"
And he's like, "Are you blind? Yeah. Deploy the garrison."
okay, boss. It's like, again, it's like you say, it's like wherever he goes, things go wrong. It's like, it literally is in that command room. He's like, "Right, I'm coming here to get the Death Star plans. We're all going to be safe." And then he looks out the window. He's like, "Oh no, they're bloody here, aren't they? Not again."
And this all seems to be the time frame of the movie seems to be like 1 or 2 days. So he's having like the worst day at work ever.
Yeah, exactly. It's the worst week of his job ever, isn't it? It's like, God no. Now I've got to go see Vader. I've got to tell him what Tarkin's doing. He's just and then I've got to tell him that the Death Star's probably got a big hole in it somewhere, but I don't know where.
There might be.
I was like, God. He plays it so well on so many levels. As you said, like one minute he's sinister and he's smug and he's in control, and then the next minute he's like, he's just like losing it. It's like
a blind panic.
Yeah, blind panic. So trying to just hold everything together. So. I really hope that he does return in some shape or form.
Yeah, me too. And that kind of leads me into my next point, which was the battle on Scarif, which was fantastic. And, you know, Scarif being the excellent tropical island planet. And
your favorite resort to travel to destroy.
And why would you put a facility there? But that's so Star Wars as well.
Yeah, I mean, it is a bit questionable, isn't it? It's like it's a data facility. You've got all these inhospitable planets, like covered in lava, like acid rain or whatever, all this. And then, we've got this beautiful tropical island that hasn't even got cloud cover for this.
No.
Anyway, maybe that's it because they need to transmit and they need clear, beautiful skies. I don't know.
Oh, that's true. There you go.
Solve the problem.
That makes sense. So I'll write that down, please, everyone. The attack was just so amazing. It reminded me of the Dirty Dozen, but you're absolutely right. It does remind me also of all those Vietnam films. And when they were landing, there's a real sense of adventure in this, and there's a feeling of wanting to be there, and I was seeing something on Raiders of the Lost Ark, and the thing with him that makes this adventure so fun is his enthusiasm for the adventure, and although that all these soldiers and Jin and Cassian are facing terrible odds, they're all almost reveling in the battle to come. There's not a lot of angst, and there's just grim determinations. And as she said, we'll take the next chance and the next chance. And these are kind of gritty soldiers that have lived their life fighting, and they look forward to battle. And that's why they were able to bring that group together.
I also think it goes back to the moral compass thing. And as Cassian says earlier, it's like we've done terrible things, and this... Mm. If we stop now, that will have all been for nothing.
That's right.
And so now it's like, well, as you know, mentioned, this is like the Hail Mary. It's like it's a redemption thing on top of everything else. And so they're comfortable with their death. It's like the minute they board that ship, they're all comfortable with knowing they're not coming back.
Yeah, and, exactly. And not only they're comfortable, they embrace it. They embrace it's almost like the
it's a hero's
the,
death.
Um, hero's death going to Valhalla.
You took the word right out of my mouth.
But some great moments on the battle. They started off with the classic Millennium Falcon bait and switch, where they encourage the ground crew to come on and they take the uniforms.
I'm sorry, but like, who keeps their ship manifest down a hole underneath? Oh, it's down here. I'm like, okay, we'll all go down there. And it's like, yeah. So what I did love was the smoke when they land, and they use the smoke screen under the ship for them all to combat roll out and smoke cover.
That was great. And the battle goes on. We're seeing all the explosions. It was beautifully done. And then we cut back to Yavin 4. And we see X-Wing fighters being scrambled. And then, of course, there's a ridiculous but more than welcome cameo by C-3PO and R2-D2. Do you remember that bit?
Yeah, exactly. Just like, oh, where are they off to? It's Laurel and Hardy.
Exactly. Yeah. And beautiful stage battle scenes on the planet. Seeing stormtroopers on the beach was fantastic. And just when you didn't think it could any bit get more exciting, there's X-Wing fighters in atmosphere. And then, of course, we see the walkers come through. And that was just another great surprise. And you just keep adding layer and layer of icing on top of the cake.
Exactly. Well, it's that when the walkers start crashing through palm trees and you've got guys dressed like Vietnam GIs, like just running, I was waiting for flamethrowers, actually. I'm pretty surprised there wasn't some napalm being thrown around in there somewhere. But, it ticked all boxes.
Yeah, and I love the shot where Chirrut has a rocket launcher and he fires it at the walker and the walker takes it like a punch in the face.
I have to say that, because I was like, but then one of the rebel ships comes in and takes one out, and so they haven't magnetically shielded them yet.
This is exactly right.
Yeah, and then these were early versions of Hoth. They're like, hold on a minute.
Absolutely. I've read early versions of Imperial walkers that didn't have the shielding and were vulnerable to X-Wing laser attack. You know, they shot it in the knee, and even the little guy had his machine gun, his ion rifle that took out the knee of the Imperial walker. Then all three of them just go down.
Yeah.
But an amazing battle scene, but it leads on to the beautiful and emotional death of K2SO and I just wanted to do a quick rundown of why he's at my favorite. Cool. And you know about Alan Tudyk a bit more than me by the sounds of things.
He was incredible in Firefly, and I loved Firefly. I mean, we won't talk about Joss Whedon and stuff anymore, but Firefly was phenomenal. But Alan Tudyk, I also love, I mean, I'm a massive comic book fan, and Alan Tudyk is hilarious and brilliant in Doom Patrol, by the way. You guys haven't seen it yet. I'm not sure what it is. Hopefully it's still on HBO Max and they haven't erased that from their tapes yet. Mm. I don't know. Mm. But he is very good in that as well.
Alan Tudyk does a lot of animated voices as well. I thought K2SO was the perfect Star Wars droid. You know, highly intelligent, but still a fish out of water, not quite understanding human behavior, and yet has these loyalties to his owners, you know. Mm. But it also serves as a comic relief without doing gag. The first time we see K2SO is when Jin runs out of the transport and he just punches her to the floor and says, "Congratulations, you are being rescued. Please do not resist."
the bit where Cassian hands her the blaster and K2SO, he goes, "Do you want to know the probability that she'll use that on you?" Yeah. It's high. It's very high. It's just the way the line is delivered is just nails it. And that sets the tone of like this, as you said, it's like this super intelligent, little bit quirky, badass droid who's loyal to the end. Yeah. And now tell us about his end, Jonathan.
Yes. Well, when they're going into the hilariously over-designed hard drive storage. Oh.
That's our minor. I don't know about yours, but like, yeah. It's minor in a zero exactly. gravity like chasm that goes out the top of my house. Yeah. Just
yeah. And I remember watching this for the first time, and this is, you know, K2SO is a new droid, a new film, but I swear things got a little dusty when K2SO was, you know, were fought to the end to save our heroes, you know.
Yeah, I mean, as I mentioned earlier, like I seem to remember that I thought he lasted a bit longer. I thought there was right. a bit more footage of him getting a pummeling in that room.
Yeah.
Maybe it was wishful thinking, or maybe I've seen some, like, weird YouTube fan thing where they added bits to it. But I mean, yeah, I mean, it's a noble end to a noble robot.
Yeah.
It's
exactly right. Exactly right. but then there was all the climbing, which was hilarious. And I don't know, you know, when they try to climb yeah. up the thing, I still find it is such a Star Wars thing.
I don't know if is it Star Wars? Or is it for me that felt like James Bond or something? It felt like GoldenEye or something.
Yeah.
To get to the top
or
and like,
Mission Impossible.
Yeah, or yeah. Mission Impossible or just yeah, any
but
other one.
I think
one.
It's more that it's like the ridiculously designed things by the Imperials. You know, like when Obi-Wan was turning off the tractor beam.
Yeah.
He had a 3-inch platform to kind of get around to the other side of it.
Yeah. You know? So we're going to put this. Like, yeah. Imagine if you're the guy doing the maintenance on that. And you're scared of heights. Every time you got to go and fix that thing, you got to look down that camera. Like, why did they put it here? Why can't they just put it in the room on the edge? It's like, why does it have to be in the middle here? It's like, yeah, what?
Put them in a box.
It's just a fuse box. Why do they have to put it in this, like, you know, like endless chasm? But that's the whole of the podcast. There is like the beautiful yeah. and like ridiculous design of the Empire. But
yeah,
there's got to be a book of that somewhere. But yeah, the climbing to the top was, I mean, you know, we could have saved 3 minutes on that. So yeah. Anyway. So.
And of course, we get to the end and the plans get delivered into space. And then we know that our heroes are destined for death. There's another shot from the Death Star. And what a moment where you see the Death Star rising
over
the planet.
Yeah. Well, what I love about that, it rises over the horizon, which is beautiful. And the focusing dish is literally looking at Ben Mendelsohn. He's like, oh man, what a week I'm having. It's like, I've just, like, come on, can I not get a break? It's like, you know, it's like 3 hours earlier, like Vader's crushing his windpipe and he's like, yeah. If I just get those plans back, I'm going to be like, I'm up for a promotion. And then the Death Star's there. And he's like, oh shit.
Yeah.
That's it.
But then we see our heroes again, just knowing that they're destined to die, and it was a very emotional end to the show, to the movie, and again, these are new characters, mm-hmm. and that we've never met before, and there's always a talk about, oh, everyone wants to see. You know, the old characters, no one wants to have the new ones. But in this one, every single character I love, every single character felt like Star Wars. And I had zero complaints mm-hmm. about any of them, from the droids to the villain to anything. I thought it was all on point yeah, Star Wars.
Yeah, you're right. There was not one bad egg in there. But and then go on then. Say it. Do it.
All right. So. And just when you think
it's all over.
And if you don't mind, I would like to do a blow by blow. So Vader announces.
Are you doing the noises as well?
Well, you can do the noises.
No, I'm not doing the noises. I'm not doing the noises.
And then, to the surprise of nearly everyone that I know that saw this film, there's that shot in the dark. And then suddenly you see the red lightsaber being ignited. And then we see Vader in full force, in his full power, and we see his whole repertoire. And so let me break it down. he walks in there and he starts deflecting blaster fire into the soldiers. He slams a soldier into the roof with a force before cutting him in half as he walks past. He then deflects a blaster fire like he did in Cloud City with his hand directly into a rebel soldier, killing him instantly, force pulling four blasters from the rebels before cutting them down in classic, and then a classic force choke and toss before thrusting into the final soldier straight through his chest and into the door. And then that before they finally launch, and then we see him standing there with his cape in the breeze somehow of empty face, yes, basically shaking, yes, his fist. And although that was weird, I thought it was still perfectly fine.
When you watch Rogue One the first time and that saber comes on, it's like,
yeah.
I mean, you've just watched a great Star Wars film and you feel you're back in the universe and everything is right in the world, and we're going to get a trilogy that's going to be good. That didn't quite happen, but anyway. But that saber comes on, and you're like, "Oh my god!" And as you said, we've never seen Vader this brutal at this point. And and again, I tip my hat to Gareth Edwards. It's like, it just comes at you, and it's like, it's just like hammering. It wasn't Vader. It was Batman. He's just coming at them, and he's just slamming them, just doing everything. It's like, and I love the fear, like the rebels. They first of all they stand the ground and they're shooting, and then they're like, oh my god, oh my god. And the guy's holding the disc, literally holding the damn floppy disc from
the panic.
He's like, what do I do with this? And that was the one thing that annoyed me, is that door is like 6 inches ajar, and there's still, he's banging on the door. Just pass the damn disc through, son. You're dead, you're cooked, you're done. But I mean, it's just to see that Vader come in. I mean, if we're gonna nitpick here, right?
Yeah.
Like, we've seen it now, and we know Vader can do this. I mean, he could have force-pulled that ship, like that blockade runner. No? Could he? All right, that would have ruined the whole trilogy. Like, oops.
Well, hang on. Where's that in the timeline? No, you're right. He did, like, if you go to Kenobi, he actually force-pulled a ship.
Yeah, he held the ship.
But maybe it was... Yeah.
Yeah. But anyway,
they'd gone too far.
Yeah. Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Okay. We'll leave it at that. And also, there was probably, he couldn't force pull that ship because there was that weird intergalactic wind.
That wind in space.
The wind in space.
The space wind.
The space wind. That was what it was. But we shouldn't diss the Lord of Sith. It was pretty phenomenal end to a good show. And like, I think the fact that we're all fired up and we want to do this whole season, like rambling on at you all, it's clear to see that hopefully there is some good to come from this.
Oh, I'm super excited about Andor, and from the small clips that I've seen and the people involved, I am just excited to watch this rather than a little bit suspicious, as I have been of the new at the beginning of the new Game of Thrones series. I'm like,
I mean,
but I'm excited now with this one. All right, so let's do you have anything else, any random notes or anything?
Just
like that?
one thing, that just silly little thing which I loved, was the little nod to the cantina where we see that they bump into the two guys.
That's right. Yeah,
he's got the death sentence on like seven systems or whatever. You wait your turn, buddy. You're gonna get yours. So I mean, that is kind of funny. It's kind of nice little nods and that was good. But no, in general, I think I've probably bored everyone with all of my thoughts on this at this point.
So. No, you've been great, mate. It's been really good to have you on.
No, it's a pleasure to do it. So.
Good, good, good. We'll look forward to the rest of the season. Let's see, a couple of other notes. One, I forgot how awesome the Tarkin was being with it, although you're right, it wasn't quite there, but yeah, it was really great to see him.
Yeah, I mean, it's great, and the technology is incredible, what they can do, and who are we to tell people, you know, that it doesn't look...
But then that led to the moment of where there was like the scream of a TIE fighter going to the Star Destroyer, and the Star Destroyer was coming out of shadow, but it wasn't the Star Destroyer moving, it was the weapon dish
exactly
going into place.
Yeah.
And then they pull back, and you just see how massive the Death Star was, because all the Star Destroyers looked minuscule beside it.
But I mean, it's incredible. I mean, it looked like a small moon.
Yeah, yeah. That's not a that's not a moon. That's a space station. Get my impressions and my quotes better in future. Yeah. But my other only in Star Wars moment was when Jin was climbing up to the tower to ascend the, and there was a hatch that was opening and closing.
Like a
cigar cutter.
Yeah.
And she had to get through it. And I'm like, why would anyone install that?
Do you remember Space Ace, the cartoon video game? It's like that. It was some ridiculous, like, sort of, choppy. Yeah. I mean, what in what world, unless you're making space sausages, what would that vent be doing? It's very strange. Very strange.
Yeah, it looks super sharp. If it was an access hatch, you know, but we did see that in Mandalorian, actually, like finally get to see someone cut in half by a too fast closing door that they have in Star
but
Wars.
Can we just talk about this cigar chopping thing again? And we're back to the Empire design book again. Imagine you're the technician who's, I've got to go up there and I've got to sort the air conditioning out. That's playing up that vent, and you just it's like, is that, in what world would you build that?
You might lose a hand,
you might lose a finger. But it makes for great movies, so
It really does. And it's so Star Wars. So basically, it's only in Star Wars do you see this sort of thing.
Mm.
All right, great. Well, that's it. Let's take a break, and there's more to come. Stay with us. Okay, we are back. In the news section, we have no news. Except that Andor is out on the 21st of September. And we will be covering the first three episodes as a movie, as apparently it is intended. James and I will be on the road shooting around the world and throughout America. But we will endeavor to get the new podcast out directly. But we'll always give you a couple of days to get your feedback in, because we love having feedback. And okay, and speaking of that, let's get to the listener feedback.
Go on, son.
First up is Kristen Halberg. Rogue One is incredible. I'll never forget my daughter, 4.5 at the time, turned to my husband about midway through and realized no one was going to make it. Knowing that they would have been in all the other movies with this epic plan to steal the Death Star, she knew. It was a perfect blend of comedy, adventure, and big feelings. Perfect Star Wars movie. Couldn't agree more.
Yeah, that's very true. I have to say, you have a very intelligent daughter at 4.5, if she realized that. It's like, yeah.
I think I picked it up about the same time.
And Jeffrey H. Lab says, I'm one with the podcast, and the podcast is with me. Can't wait. Even rewatched in HD with Andor trailer.
Yeah, perfect. And when Carver Holsthausen, I'm really excited for this, as I loved Rogue One. It looks amazing from the trailer, and we'll be watching and listening along with you guys. Thank you, Anwen.
Thank you. Yeah. And then finally, on the comments here, Kelly Burgess. I'm pretty excited for this one. Maybe I should finish Obi-Wan first, though. I think, Kelly, yes, I think you should. I don't know at what point you are in Obi-Wan, but trust me, finish that. It is amazing.
It finished very, very well. Oh, yeah. The last two episodes were great. Yes. All right, that's our show. Thanks for listening, everyone. And if you want to write in or leave us a message, please do. We love all the feedback. You can find all our contact information at podcastia.com, or leave a message on one of our many Facebook groups.
And while you're there, be sure to check out the other shows we've got too.
Yeah, Podcastia is covering Rings of Power and House of the Dragon. Any quick thoughts on those, James?
I think, like you, I'm like, I was a little bit wary of these, but I've only managed to watch like 15 minutes of the first Rings of Power, and I have to say, I'm pretty excited, actually. I think they've done a great job on it, visually anyway. We'll wait to see how the characters develop, but I'm hoping to get some time to watch a couple more episodes this weekend.
Yeah, and I've really enjoyed them as well. Surprisingly, I was a very deeply suspicious of them, but they are great. So check out the podcasts. They're always a pleasure to listen to. And our next episode is Andor Season 1, Episodes 1, 2, and 3. And all right, that's our show.
Thanks for listening, everyone.
And may the Force be with you.